Chapter 16. It was yet another departure made in the cold gray hours before dawn. The team gathered wordlessly at the vehicle, everyone operating on reserves of strength they didn't know they had. At least today there was a grim determination in the air, the knowledge that this really might be the last leg of the journey. They knew the trains were not safe. Boarding a commercial airline would have been laughable. That left an 11-hour journey by car to Slovakia, in what felt like a retracing of their steps, from Switzerland through northern Italy, across the width of Austria to the Slovakian capital of Bratislava. The big question hanging in the air for all of them was how long it would take Egar to get himself off that mountain, and then send forces to Slovakia. "I've never been to the High Tatras," Lewis said as they passed through the capital. "I hear they're quite beautiful."
"Explain it again," Kate said.
"We're looking for a tunnel under a mountain?"
Professor Lewis nodded.
"We need to go to a town called Straba, on the main train line that runs across the country. From there we can take what they call a rack railway, which is a special kind of train with gears built into the tracks, for going up mountains where the grade is too steep for regular trains. At the very top of this railway is the town of Strebske Pleso. It's the highest point of elevation for a train station in the world."
"So, halfway to Strebske Pleso," Nick said, "like the map said."
"I think that's the idea," Lewis said. "It's roughly 3 miles up the mountain, so half that."
"A mile and a half," Nick said. "Is the entrance to the tunnel going to be obvious?"
"Has anything else been that easy so far?" Lewis asked.
"Yeah, I didn't think so," Nick said. "But assuming we find it, these rune symbols will guide us through the tunnels somehow."
Lewis nodded again. "You'll have to consult the map at every turn. It will be your only hope to find the gold."
"We're talking about 400 tons of it," Kate said.
"How did they move that into a tunnel without anyone noticing?"
"Great question," Lewis said.
"As it happens, the railway was closed down in 1936, so the tracks were sitting empty when they used them to hide the gold. I looked it up, and a modern rail car can carry over 100 tons. Figure a little less than that for the 1940s, but that's still only a few cars. On a totally empty track, that would have been fairly easy to keep out of sight."
"Are the tracks still empty?" Kate asked.
"No. They rebuilt them in 1970, so I don't know what it's going to look like now, or if that old tunnel is even findable."
It was another 3 hours of driving to cross most of the country, heading northeast from Bratislava, finally reaching the High Tatras, the rugged border between Slovakia and Poland. Still an hour away, they could all see the jagged summit of Mount Krivan in the distance.
"If you talk to some of the old-timers around here," Lewis said, "they'll tell you that it's their national duty to climb Mount Krivan at least once in their lifetime."
"You promised," Quentin said. "No more climbing." They passed through the towns of Rozomborok and Liptovsky Michal, places with old souls, old streets, and buildings that looked almost exactly the same as they did a century ago. It felt like they were driving back through time, and it brought home the reality of what they were really doing, of what they were trying to find, and who had been responsible for collecting it and hiding it. Everyone in the vehicle was quiet now, alone with their own thoughts. They reached the town of Streba as the sun went down on another long day. They found another small inn, away from the main road, and paid for 3 rooms with cash euros. After a quick bite and some coffee, they located the train station from which the rack railway ran up to Strebske Pleso. They watched the station carefully before approaching, looking for any sign of the Brotherhood's men. Just like the gondola in Bruil Cervinia, the traffic on the rack railway was mostly people on their way home, regular local Slovaks who'd gone up to visit the famously beautiful lake near the Strebske Pleso station to enjoy a day in the mountains. Nick, Kate, Quentin, Jake, and Professor Lewis all entered the station and boarded the red and white train, sitting by the windows so they could look out both sides. The train took off slowly, powered by the electric wires that ran above the tracks. It clattered along, its wheels grabbing the cogs to climb the slope. 3 miles up the mountain, the forest on either side of the tracks was getting thicker by the minute. They had no exact idea what they were looking for, but there was nothing to see anyway except trees on either side, with occasional concrete embankments built against the slope to stabilize the ground. "What kind of tunnel are we looking for?" Nick whispered to Kate. "A railway tunnel? A pedestrian tunnel? A gopher hole?" Kate shrugged and shook her head. When they reached the top, they turned around and came back down. This time, because Jake had timed the slow ride up, he knew when they'd reach the midway point. "Right about now," he said, as the train ground its way back down to Streba. But there was nothing to see in the fading light except the dark silhouettes of the trees. As they got off the train, Kate scanned the station, feeling like danger was a moment away. "I don't know if this is just a healthy surveillance instinct," she thought. "Or do these guys have me spooked now? I can't even tell anymore." "Do we look for the tunnel now?" Quentin asked everyone. "Or do we wait for daylight?" "I want to find it as much as anyone," Nick answered. "But if we stumble around in the dark up there, we'll just be burning our energy." They all agreed. They would get a few hours of sleep, then start looking for the tunnel at first light. Nick found Kate alone in her room. She'd just ended a call with Jessup, and she still had the burner phone in her hand. "What's the good word?" Nick asked. "I'm afraid there isn't any," Kate said. "Jessup still hasn't found the leak at Interpol. I'm really hoping we don't strike out tomorrow. I'd like to find the gold and put an end to all of this." "I hear you," Nick said, nodding. "It's been fun, but it's time to move on. What are you going to do with your share of the gold when we find it?" Kate's eyes narrowed to slits and she jabbed her finger into Nick's chest. "There are no shares. The gold goes back to its owners or to a righteous cause. I swear if I find out you've taken so much as a speck of gold dust, I'll drop-kick you from here to eternity." Nick nodded again. "Gotcha. No shares. What are you going to do with your finder's fee?" "I have a number of ideas." If anyone else had said this, Kate would have smiled at the joke. But this was Nick. She knew he might not be joking. In the not-so-distant past, he had had a cavalier attitude about helping himself to other people's fortunes. She looked to the heavens for help and groaned. Nick took a step closer and tucked a strand of stray hair behind Kate's ear. "You're sexy when you're exasperated," he said. "I'm not exasperated," Kate said. "I'm hungry." "Maybe this will help," Nick said. He pulled out what looked like a candy bar wrapper and opened it. "What is that?" "It's called a Horalki. They've been making them here in Slovakia for 100 years. "It looks like one of those wafer cookies that taste like cardboard," Kate said. "Don't you have any of that good chocolate from Paris?" "Try it," he said, putting it to her mouth. She took a small, skeptical bite. There was a delicate peanut butter cream sandwiched between the wafers, and the edges had been dipped in fine dark chocolate. "Oh my God," she said. "I have a new favorite thing in the world." The big bad wolf would have been envious of the smile Nick flashed Kate. "I might have some more," he said. "Maybe you can help me remember." She locked eyes with him. "Like how?" "Surprise me," Nick said. Kate grabbed Nick by his shirt and pulled him in for a kiss she was pretty sure he'd consider Horalki worthy. There was a knock on the door, and 2 seconds later Jake came into the room. "Sorry," Jake said, looking at both of them. "Did I interrupt something?" "No," Nick said, handing Kate 2 more packages of Horalki. "We were talking about tomorrow." "The professor has a few ideas for finding the tunnel," Jake said. "In the meantime, We should all get some rest.
Good idea, Nick said, because we always strike at dawn.
The next morning, just before the sun came up, Nick, Kate, Quentin, and Jake rode the railway up to Srebska Pleso. They didn't try to jump off the train midway, because it was a small two-car train and getting noticed wasn't worth the risk. Plus, by starting at the top, it would be an easy mile and a half coming downhill, instead of a harder mile and a half going up. The professor was back in the inn, waiting by his phone in case they called. Assuming they could call. Once they were in the tunnels, God knew what would happen to their cell signal. Quentin had the map with him, but now there was one particular symbol on the first page that they were focused on. The Berkano rune. It was shaped like a rough B, but with two sharp points instead of rounded mounds. It generally meant birth, or new life, or sometimes a starting point. That was what they would be looking for in the woods surrounding the railway. They got off at the upper station and waited for the people going down to board the train. The station was empty. They slipped outside and scanned the surroundings. Looking down the tracks, they saw nothing but trees and the back of the train as it rounded a bend and disappeared from view. "Everybody be careful," Nick said. "Keep talking to each other." They were all wearing earpieces again. For as long as they were in relatively close proximity to each other, at least, they could stay in constant contact.
"Thank you for being here," Quentin said. "No matter what happens, I'll never forget it."
"Vela stastia," Kate said. "It's Slovak for good luck." I looked it up.
"Vela stastia," everyone else said together. Then they were off to find the 400 tons of gold that had been hidden for 3/4 of a century. After a few minutes of walking, they came to a sign next to the track. It was modern, reading 1K on one side, meaning 1 kilometer traveled in that direction. They knew they were looking for something a lot older. A few minutes later, they heard a rumbling noise and ducked off the tracks into the dense forest. It was the same two-car train, which would keep going up and down all day. When they reached the halfway point, they split up. Nick and Kate took one side of the tracks while Jake and Quentin took the other. Their earpieces kept them all connected. There was no sign of anyone else near the tracks. It was even a beautiful morning to wander around on the side of a Slovakian mountain, especially as the sun rose high enough above the trees. Unfortunately, there was no tunnel entrance to be found. They went farther and farther away from the exact midpoint of the railway, wondering if the original line could have run on a slightly different course than the version modified in 1970. "If you're redoing this train line," Kate said, "and you see the entrance to a tunnel, why wouldn't you go in and check it out?" "I think we would have heard about it if they found 400 tons of Nazi gold in 1970, Nick said. Kate stopped, looked down at the foliage that was all around her legs. "Does poison ivy grow in this part of Europe?" she asked. "No," Nick said, startling her as he pushed through a heavy wall of vines. "But they do have something called aconite around here, also known as wolfsbane, or the devil's helmet, I think."
"Yeah? What does it look like?"
"Couldn't tell you," Nick said.
"You may be standing in it."
He smiled. She glared at him. But then she stopped dead. She was staring at something directly behind him.
"What is it?" he asked,
turning to see what she was looking at. About 30 yards away was one of the many fortified embankments that were dotted all up and down the mountain, whenever the ground needed to be stabilized to protect the tracks. This was one of the older embankments, not concrete like the newer ones, but made by setting a row of railroad ties directly into the slope.
"That's it," she said.
"Where?"
"I don't see it."
"Right there." Nick zeroed in on how the railroad ties set into the slope started short, got longer and longer until they reached a peak, receded to short again, then back to longer, then back to short. It was the Berkano rune, the rough B with sharp points. It just happened to be set on its side with the points going up. "Guys," Nick said into his earpiece, "I think Kate found it." A few minutes later, Jake and Quentin were standing next to them, looking at the shape formed by the ties. "Before we do anything else," Jake said, "let's decide how we want to play this. I've circled our perimeter. If someone else is here, they're not close. But that doesn't mean they're not watching us." "They may have gotten smarter," Quentin said. "They may be waiting for us to do the hard work this time, then move in if they think we've found something." There was a rumbling sound in the distance. It resolved into nothing more than another train going by. They waited, and when it passed, they heard nothing but the silence of the forest again, broken only by the buzzing of insects and a slight breeze through the leaves. "For all we know, Egger's still stuck in the snow," Nick said. "If we've really found the tunnel, I don't see why we should wait." Kate did a slow 360, scanning the forest as far as she could see in every direction, waiting for her "I'm being watched" sensor to fire. Finally, she added her agreement and the team moved toward the railroad ties. The ties were set firmly into the slope. The bottom ends sunk at least 3 feet into the ground. Kate took out her flashlight and shined it through the narrow gaps between the ties. As she moved toward the center, the light seemed to reach farther. She found one spot where the gap was slightly larger, foraged around on the ground for a long stick, and worked it into the gap. As far as she inserted the stick, it hit nothing but air. Nick and Jake climbed up the slope to the top of the ties. When they tested the center, it didn't budge. They started rocking it back and forth. After a minute of this, it started to move. They worked it more and more, until Kate could see a black nothingness behind it. "You've got it," she said. "Keep going." They worked at the tie, until finally it came all the way down. Kate shined her light into the gap. They had found the tunnel. Nick turned on his flashlight and squeezed his way in through the narrow opening. He was barely able to fit. The floor of the tunnel was packed dirt. Trusses made from railroad ties held up the walls and ceiling, placed roughly every 10 feet. The tunnel led off into the darkness, farther than Nick's flashlight beam could penetrate. "Come on in, guys," he said, putting his face in the gap. "It's like a Disney ride, but with no lights. And probably lots of rats. And maybe some gold," Kate said. It was easy for her to squeeze through the gap. Quentin slipped through next. That left Jake, who stood outside looking at the gap, thinking, "No way in hell." "Exhale," Nick said. "Think thin." "Hold on a second," Jake said. He went to the other end of the tie they had pulled off to create the opening, grabbed the free end, lifted, and then tilted it back toward the opening. "What are you doing?" Nick asked. "Walling us in now?" "Think thin, that was just a joke." "I'm hiding our tracks," Jake said. He leaned the tie against the embankment, lining it up at the top. Now it was less likely that someone coming by would notice it. He stepped back, took a breath, and prepared himself mentally to squeeze through an opening that he might have fit through 30 years ago. Quentin and Nick grabbed the arm that came through first. They each put a foot on either side of the opening for leverage. With one final wrench, Jake came through and they all fell down. "That was graceful," Kate said. They brushed themselves off and started walking down the tunnel, quickly leaving the sunlight behind them. The air got heavier, the smell of damp earth got stronger, and the overall closed-in feeling grew more acute. Nick shined his light on what passed for the ceiling. Thin boards ran lengthwise from one truss to the next, but most of these boards were cracked. Some were broken off completely and lay in pieces on the dirt floor. "They either made this on the cheap or in a hurry," Nick said. "Or both." "How far do we have to go?" Kate asked. "Good question." About 100 yards later, they came to the first fork in the road. Quentin took out the map and shined his light on the first page. "I think we're here," he said, running one finger on the line leading away from the initial Berkana rune. "That means we go, what? Right now?" "No.
I think it's left, Nick said, looking over his shoulder. See how that other line cuts over this way?
I think that's a different tunnel, Quentin said. This one goes this way.
It's this way, Kate said, nodding toward the right-hand tunnel.
How do you know? Nick asked.
Look.
She put her light on the wooden beams over their heads. On one was carved a symbol in the shape of a diamond. On the other was a symbol that resembled a rough capital Y.
I'll be damned, Nick said. I wonder what happens if you go the wrong way.
How about we don't find out? They kept going down the next segment of the tunnel until they came to another juncture. Once again they stopped, looked carefully at the map, found the symbols carved into the railroad ties that spanned across the rough ceiling, then chose what they believed to be the right direction. When they reached the last symbol on the first page of the map, they matched up the same symbol on the second page. With each step, they could feel the floor of the tunnel sloping downward. They were heading to the bottom of the mountain. When they stopped to rest, they all coughed out the dirt that had been collecting in their throats and lungs.
Everybody okay? Nick asked.
Before anyone could answer, they all felt the low rumble.
What is that?
Kate asked.
A train.
Nick shook his head, looking back up the tunnel they had just come down.
I don't think that's a train. I think they're here.
We were wondering what happens when you take a wrong turn, Jake said. There must be a tripwire, or maybe a plate set into the dirt floor. Dynamite might leak a little nitroglycerin over the years, but it'll still have a kick to it.
This is why you don't leave home without your treasure map, Nick said.
The question is, did that blast take out all of them? Or are they still coming? The question was answered a minute later with another rumble, louder to the ear, with a harder kick that they could not only feel but see as a cloud of dirt came drifting down from the ceiling. They kept going, even as they still had to carefully pause at each junction to remember exactly where they were, what the last symbol had been, and where the next symbol was pointing them. The next rumble wasn't just louder. Through the white noise of the explosion, they could also hear the sound of several men yelling at once.
They're right over us, Nick said.
We have to stay careful, Jake said. No need to rush. We're the ones with the map.
What happens when it's time to get back out? Kate asked.
Maybe they'll make enough wrong turns, Nick said, that we won't even have to worry about them anymore. The question hung in the air as they kept moving, even as the explosions continued and each one seemed to get closer and closer. Even between the explosions, the voices drifted down the tunnels, as harsh and threatening as the barks of vicious dogs.
Concentrate, Nick said, as the team almost misread the map on the next junction.
We make a mistake. They won't even have to catch up to us. They made it to the last page of the map. There were seven more symbols to negotiate, seven more junctions in this impossibly complex labyrinth of tunnels. They heard the voices close behind them, closer than ever. Jake took out his Sig Sauer and positioned himself behind the team. A figure appeared at the far end of a straightaway. Jake fired and was answered with a spray of bullets from a submachine gun.
Get to the next turn, Jake said. I'll hold them off.
We're not leaving you, Kate said.
She took out her own Beretta and started firing down the same straightaway.
It's right here, Quentin said. 100 more feet!
Nick hurried to the next junction and quickly checked the map. There was no time to double-check.
To the right, Nick yelled. This way! To the right!
As Jake and Kate caught up to him, he motioned to the left, where Quentin was already waiting.
To the right! Nick yelled again,
hoping that someone behind them could hear him. Someone who knew enough English to understand right versus left. They disappeared down the left tunnel, moving quickly but quietly. The voices could be heard in the other tunnel. Nick counted it down in his head. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The explosion reverberated down the narrow tunnel, almost blowing them over with heat and sound and a wave of concussed air.
That was a dirty trick, Quentin said.
Yeah, well done, Kate said.
They had 6 more symbols left, then 5, then 4. They didn't hear any more sounds behind them. They let themselves slow down. Three left, then two, until they reached the last test. Here the tunnel branched off into two last tunnels, placed very close together. But there were no symbols carved into the wood bracing up the ceiling. "What's the symbol we're looking for?" Nick asked. "Professor called it Fehu, meaning wealth," Quentin said, "which is how he knew it was the last one. But I don't see it." Nick examined the entrance to the last two tunnels, without daring to step foot into either one. Jake pulled out his burner phone, tried to call Professor Lewis, but he was underneath a mountain. If the phone could have laughed in his face, it would have. "Let's think about this," Nick said. "We can't blow this last one." They heard the sounds of voices again, and with heavy pounding footsteps. Whoever was still alive, they were right behind them. "We don't have much time," Jake said, drawing his gun and getting ready to fire. "Somebody better make a decision." The voices and the footsteps got louder. Kate, Nick, and Quentin stared at the last page of the map, waiting for the answer to reach up and grab them. "Right about now would be great," Jake said, getting ready to fire at the first man he saw come around that last corner. "This way," Kate said. She didn't wait for anyone else to come with her. She just headed straight into the right-hand tunnel, holding her breath and waiting for the explosion. It didn't come. Nick and Quentin ran in behind her, followed by Jake. They made it down the tunnel and barely out of sight, just as the men behind them reached the same junction. "How did you know to go that way?" Nick asked. "I didn't," Kate said. "Not for sure. But look." She showed them the last page of the map, where the Fehu rune was created with two lines coming off a single vertical line, like two branches on a tree, but both on the right side. "So I just figured. Go right," she said. She was cut off by another explosion, the biggest and loudest of all. This one really did knock Jake, Quentin, Nick, and Kate off their feet. They all lay on their backs for a long time. It was completely dark. Kate fumbled around on the ground for her flashlight, found it, and shined it on the men. "Is everybody okay?" "You'll have to speak up," Nick said. "I think my eardrums are broken." When they were all on their feet again, they shook their heads clear and walked a few yards back up the tunnel. Jake led with the barrel of his gun, but it was a pointless gesture. The tunnel behind them was completely closed off by a cave-in.
"So there's another way out of here, right?" Nick asked. "I'm sure that's on the map, too."
"Right." They walked down the last 100 yards of the tunnel until it opened up into a larger space. How much larger, it was impossible to say. But the air suddenly felt different all around them, and the beams of their flashlights were lost in the darkness.
"Watch where you're walking," Nick said. "God knows what other booby traps got set around here."
They moved forward slowly until their flashlights reflected against a hard black surface. As they got closer, the huge object in front of them took form. It was a locomotive.
"Are we really seeing this?"
Nick asked.
"How did this get here?"
"On these tracks," Quentin said, kicking at the metal rail beneath one of the train's great wheels. Jake found the ladder to the cab of the locomotive and hoisted himself up. A few moments later, a miracle happened. There was light. He jumped back down to the ground, holding a lantern.
"I'm a little surprised the oil still burns," he said, "but I'll take it."
He handed a second lantern to Quentin, took a match from an ancient box of matches, and lit it. Now there were two glowing lights, and they were able to make out just how big the space was that they had found. It was a railway tunnel with high vaulted ceilings, not like the cramped, barely propped up passageways they had been walking in. The tracks led into the darkness, farther than they could see.
"Maybe that's the way out," Nick said,
shining his light on the tracks.
But Quentin wasn't listening to anyone else now.
He was facing in the opposite direction, not at all interested in what was ahead of the locomotive, but in what was behind it. A half dozen boxcars.
"Do you realize what this is?" he asked, turning to look at them.
Do you know how many people have been looking for this? For 75 years. There have been so many rumors about where this was hidden. Most treasure hunters, the ones who are still looking, they think it's in Poland somewhere, probably between Breslau and Waldenburg. But it's not. It's here, across the border, in Slovakia.
He turned back to stare at the train.
This is it, he said. This is what we've been looking for. We found it.
Jake came forward to put a hand on Quentin's shoulder. Nick and Kate stood on the other side of him. After everything they'd been through, even if they still had to face the problem of finding a way back out of here, Quentin was right. They had found the treasure.
I know we still have work to do, Quentin said, snapping back to reality. But we have to check inside first. What does 400 tons of gold even look like?
They all went back to the first car behind the locomotive, a boxcar with a big sliding door on the side. Jake and Quentin worked together to pull the door open. Nick and Kate moved closer and shined in their flashlights, expecting to see it piled high with gold bars. They couldn't quite make out what they were seeing at first. Old tattered cloth, and something else, scattered all over the floor, pale in the glare of the light. Bones. They were looking at the skeletons of a dozen men. Holy God, Quentin said, playing his flashlight across the skulls. These must have been the men who brought this train down here.
Dead men tell no tales, Jake said. They all knew he was right. These were the mainline grunt soldiers who had helped hide this gold. Men who could never be trusted again.
Let's check out the next one, Quentin said. They went to the next boxcar. When the door slid open, there was nothing inside. They continued to the next car, and the next, and the next. Aside from the bones of the men who had brought it here, the gold train was completely empty.